This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome back to Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hey, do us a favor. Don't forget to go on social media. Spread the word about the show. We've got some great, great guests that come on every week. We're on Twitter, always placing tips on there, at Baseball Out. Follow us on Facebook. We got videos. We got a lot more information you can put on Facebook. That's facebook.com/baseballoutsidethebox. And don't forget, email me. Love getting your emails at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Love to get your questions. If you have any speakers you'd like for us to have on the show, give us some advice. You know, just email us. Just love getting emails. And now we are back with the current and new hitting coach with the Texas Rangers, Anthony Iaposi. Anthony, thanks for hanging on and being on the second part of the show. Really appreciate it. It's been a great first half. Let's continue. Let's talk about, let's talk about some issues that maybe occur with kids, and then we'll go on from there. But, especially one of the biggest things is, everybody, when you're doing well, everybody's okay. Then as soon as a young hitter is struggling, then everybody becomes a hitting coach. Mom, dad, the guy at the grocery store. I mean, everybody wants to tell you what to do, because you got in a little bit of a slump. We all know, but I know it's tough. We all know that everybody's going to get in a slump. You just look at, and nobody's hitting 1,000. So what's your advice to coaches, how to work with players, even parents? When a young kid's starting to struggle, what should they do?
Relax, as Aaron Rodgers said with the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. as that 400-pound lineman's coming at you.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's hard as a coach, a parent, to watch your player or your kid struggle when you know you work so hard. Going into the cages, practicing your swing, probably hitting in the basement, and they struggle. It's difficult to watch that. I think it's more of an encouragement thing. A player starts to struggle, he hits some balls hard, gets some outs, and then it's how is he going to respond to that? I used to say react to things, and now I say respond. Like if somebody punches you in the face and you go, ow, you react. If somebody hits you and you hit them back, now you're responding to them. So I think as a parent or coach, you have to watch how the player responds to failure and making outs, because it's easy to get down on yourself as a player, especially young kids, because they don't want to let the team down. Sure. And a lot of them, believe it or not, like when I used to do lessons, I'm talking thousands and thousands of lessons with different kids. And I'm telling you, when the parent was not there, or the parent like stood 10 feet away, like the kid 95% of the time had an unbelievable session. Yeah. A lot of times, a lot of times the parents are up close and the kid's always looking over his shoulder. Same thing happens in the game when the kid's not hitting. So he definitely feels like he's disappointing his parents. So it's getting to the root. Now, as coaches and parents, we see something with the swing because we can't read the inside or what they're thinking about. So we attack their hands, their feet, this and that. But there's something causing that. If I raise my arm, it's not because I just did it. It's because I thought about it.
Sure.
And a lot of times when I was roving with Chicago and Toronto, and I'd get a phone call and say, hey, Anthony, can you go to Myrtle Beach and see what's going on with so-and-so? He's 2 for his last 30. And you go down there and you watch a couple of days. Like I would watch. I don't go in right away. And eventually that kid comes up to you, and I'm telling you, so many times it has nothing to do with baseball when that kid was struggling. It's something off the field. He misses home. Maybe he doesn't like baseball as much anymore. Maybe the competition's too much for him. He's growing out of it, even though he's 21. He has other things he wants to do with his life. So it's showing on the field now when he starts to struggle. He's realizing that hitting is hard, like Chris Bryant always says, hitting is hard. So as far as a kid not hitting, you got to be really careful and really patient. Do some encouragement. Work with them on the side. Because baseball and hitting is such a negative thing. The only time really – people, even as a hitting coach, the only time people talk to you is when you're doing bad. So it's such a negative thing. The player's dealing with all the negative stuff, and the hardest thing to deal with is hearing it from constantly from a parent or a coach that they like. But you also have to push your player at the same time. You know, you have to teach them how to compete, and you have to push them a little bit. So you have to read the player. You have to read today's player and how they respond to your criticism. I try to teach players, young kids, 11, 12 years old, to understand corrective criticism and not get defensive about it. So, you know, my biggest thing is you know, obviously I'm a major league coach, working major league hitters, but I love talking with the coaches of our little league, because those are the guys setting the tone, the parents. Those are the people I like getting the message out to.
Yeah. Do you recommend, you know, like hitting, is bunting part of hitting? Do you recommend working on bunting?
Oh, absolutely. Bunting is great because it helps you see the ball longer. You know, what I learned from coaching the minor leagues, working with guys who were really good bunters, guys who couldn't bunt that were really fast. And, you know, at the time, my bosses would tell me, hey, make him bunt, you know, 50 times a day in practice. And I would do all these things. And in the game, the guy wouldn't do it. And then I'm just wondering, like, what's the deal in the game? Why can't he bunt it in the game? Well, you know, one, he's afraid, and he finds out. He finally tells you, I'm afraid of the ball. I don't want to get in with the pitch. And that's the same thing with, like, guys with hand movement. When you stride and separate and you're asking a guy to get his hands back, when he gets his hands back, his front shoulder is going to slope down and get in with the ball. What I learned from giving lessons, kids who can't move back, and they don't want to get in with the ball. It's scary, man. So they don't want to get in with the ball. So there's some fear of getting hit in there. Even with guys in the major league, there's some fear in there. So bunting helps that. Bunting off the machine helps you know, with some velocity. It helps you learn angles. It helps you learn, let the ball travel, let your eyes see the ball off the bat, even though you don't see it that far. But it teaches you to hang in there longer and not be afraid. Because I've seen guys who don't practice bunting that are gamers get in the box, don't practice bunting, and get it down in the game. And then I see other guys who bunt, practice all the time, and in the game they can't do it. Yeah. They're running out of the box, so they're afraid, they don't want to get in. Like, so it teaches trust to get in there with the ball, and it tries to eliminate the fear, but because you got to get your face in there. You know that.
Sure. And for young guys, you know, what about play coverage? You know, where they're standing, away from the plate, close to the plate, behind the plate, in front. Is there a way you recommend to start and then work from there?
When I'm doing lessons with the kids and I see, you know, most of the kids are either real far away or right on top of it. Mm-hmm. You know, you try to give them a foot and a half. So you put your foot on the edge of the plate where you're facing on the side of the batter's box, and then your other foot behind it, and you draw a line in the middle of the back foot, one behind the other. And that should give you play coverage with the bat, because everybody's got different arm lengths, different size feet, and then you cross the barrel over the plate, you drop the barrel should be on the outside part of the plate. And then you vary from there. If you want an inch closer, or you want an inch back, or you want an inch up, or you want an inch off the plate, but that would be your starting point, and then get to where you feel comfortable. I know a lot of good hitters in Little League and you know, high school ball get on the plate because guys don't throw them a lot of fastballs, so they get a lot of off-speed, so they get on top of the dish a little bit, to get challenged, so... but that's hitting, you know, I always see that, guys making adjustments on their own. I always thought that was good. But
now, as guys get older, you know, obviously they got more pitches. And, you know, what happens, I mean, you know, I see a lot of guys, even at the young levels, you know, the guy throws real hard, so they're moving back. Then he throws slow, and they're moving forward. But, you know, as you get older, they don't just have one pitch.
No, they don't. And the thing is, if a guy's throwing slow, you don't necessarily have to – it's not about moving in the box, what we talked about in the beginning. You just wait longer, right? If a guy's throwing harder, you anticipate a little bit more out in front. So, because, like, guys will swing at curveballs in the dirt, especially in high school. And the coach will be like, move up in the box. Well, number one, he's not throwing it for a strike, so now we're trying to swing at pitches that aren't strikes because I'm missing it.
Right.
And maybe I should back up in the box to make it even more of a ball. So – you know, I remember times in college at Lamar University when we would face a very, very hard pitcher. Jim Gilligan always had us stand up in the box to make him throw, and we would just sit fastball and just try to attack it. And guys who threw slow, we would go in the back of the box because everything would be down so that we wouldn't chase. And it just depends on you know, what you think is right and going all in on it. But, you know, move around in the box, I think you could open the field more and think of where you want to hit the ball on the field to help your timing. whether it's pull, whether it's oppo to stay back more. That doesn't mean you're going to hit it that way, but it just allows you to get the ball a little bit deeper at times.
No, and you are listening to Baseball Outside the Box. If you just joined us, we are with Anthony Iapozzi, and he is the hitting coach currently with the Texas Rangers at the big league level. Not only that, but I was reading, and I'm here in Chicago, so I'm really proud of what the Chicago Cubs have done. I followed Joe Madden for a lot of years, Theo Epstein and his philosophy. You know, John Mailey, we worked with here in Chicago, a great hitting coach. But Iapozzi was also part of that Chicago World Series because he spent a lot of years developing the program they have, and that's quoting some of the people in the front office with Major League Baseball. So we have Anthony Iapozzi. We're going to continue our talk. Anthony, listen, you talk about preparation and accountability. You know, this is very important. Can you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, for me, they go hand in hand. One of my goals is when I got into coaching, wasn't necessarily to teach a guy how to hit. It was to teach him to be accountable for his own preparation, for his own career. Teaching them to be on their own, teaching them to not make excuses, to understand that you're going to fail, to understand that you're going to lose. How do you get back up and be Rocky? Rocky got knocked down a lot. So.
And by the way, it was Italian. I just want to
throw it out. And you're going to like this one. I'm not going to get off the subject, but for anybody listening and anybody who's listening that knows me, Rocky Balboa, pound for pound, is the best heavyweight fighter of all time. He's in the Boxing Hall of Fame. He got inducted. I don't want to hear anything about it.
That's right. I second that.
So the preparation and accountability is, even like in high school, you're not going to have stats for the other team.
Right.
But you could be watching the other team warm up. You could be watching the pitcher warm up. You could watch them run sprints, and you're trying to get an edge. So teaching younger players at 11, 12 years old, if the other team's playing catch or they're taking infield, is get them interested into the other team. Get them prepared and get them accountable for that. So when you're sitting at the dugout and you look down and you see all your players watching the other team, that's like the coolest feeling. Because now you're like, okay, I hadn't had to say anything. These guys are ready to go. Their intent is there to do damage to the other team. They're trying to find a weakness. I love it when players, even the major league players, when they come in and they see something on a pitcher or they see something on a middle infielder where we can get a bag or we can take an extra base, they come in, they let everybody know. And that can be done at any level. If you're constantly teaching to watch the other team and not to be so consumed with ourselves all the time, you'll win a lot more games.
A lot of hitters, and you're working with them, and, they say you got stations set up, and they're doing four or five stations, they're hitting, and the coach is walking around. You hear this a lot, and I want to get your opinion of it, because I think we're doing this way too much. They're always asking, what am I doing wrong? Can you look at me? There's a time where after they're educated a little bit, they've got to be able to, I assume, to teach themselves a little bit.
Yeah, I think, and especially when I was coordinating, because you're ranging players from 16-year-old Venezuela, like a guy like Gleyber Torres who you sign, and then you're going to AAA and the big league guys with a lot more experience. And especially at the lower levels, like guys would ask, what's wrong with my swing? And I'd be like, I don't know. And you do that just to see their reaction, their response.
Yeah, great.
You see if they panic in their eyes or if they laugh and they get what you're trying to get at. But that's how I would always respond. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not watching you. But meanwhile, you're watching everything. Just like a parent, you're learning to see everything without them watching. It's the same thing with coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times they want to do things to impress the coach. Or, we would have, when I was coordinating, we would have an instructional ball in spring training. We had in Chicago, had this huge auditorium, like 120 seats, awesome to do presentations in spring training. And you're teaching players to coach themselves and interact with each other. So you have these classroom sessions to talk to them about that. The number one thing I say, questions are very important, but don't ask questions you know the answers to, because now you're just wanting attention.
Oh, yeah.
Older guys, So I think if you could teach that at the younger level too, and again, that goes with how we started, is getting kids to trust themselves. And that starts at a young age. Because guys struggle with that even in the big leagues. And again, those first 10 years of playing baseball is very critical to how a player thinks.
Yeah, and you talked about the feel. I imagine if you once you got a pretty good feel of your swing, now you can teach yourself, because when it doesn't feel right, something's wrong.
Yeah, and it's funny because I learned a lot. I'm talking with Ian Desmond this year with us.
Mm-hmm.
We would talk about, you know, we first met, and Ian, he didn't like to talk during the session, before or after his routine and all that. So, you know, there'd be times where I was like, oh, man, that looks good. And he'd be like, no, it doesn't. And I'm like, uh-oh. Huh. You know, like, wow. Because you see it looks great, but it doesn't feel right. So coaches have to understand that. And that when he said that to me, I went back. I could go back to times when I was playing, and it took me back to a time when I could remember picking up balls in the cage. You know, I was struggling at the time, and I had a really good session, and we're picking up the balls. And I could remember the coach going, man, that was awesome. Way to go. And I was like, thanks. But on the inside, I was like, that was horrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So to the human eye – and the coach, because you just work this guy out and you're making him feel good and you get him to, you know, get his confidence back. But on the inside, I was like, yeah, I hit a lot of line drives, but that's not going to work. You know, so that player has to continually to find out what the feel is and what he's looking for.
Sure. And here's the other thing I was thinking about. You know, the game begins, and you hear this a lot. You're making out, you come back, and, you know, coach might say, okay, you got to make an adjustment. So now you're talking about in-game adjustments. Give us an idea how you could do that at a couple levels, whether it be the high school level or the big league level.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, if you're making in-game adjustments, it's eliminating pitches. Hmm. You know, like you're watching it, and you go in with that plan, and then there's plenty of times where in the major leagues we'd have a meeting, you know, each series we have a meeting, go over the pitchers and what they have, what their strength is, what their last starts were they good or bad, was he controlling the zone. And we go in there, hey, this guy's not controlling the zone, his last couple of starts, his walks have been up, you know, we're going to try and wait him out. And then the first three innings, he's got like, you know, 90% strike percentage, you know, like totally opposite of what we did.
Yeah, that goes to report.
So we're looking at each other, looking at me, I'm like, all right. Time to adjust, you know, like, let's start jumping on him now.
But that also can happen in high school, because you look at a kid in the bullpen, he's throwing strikes all day in the bullpen, then comes in a game, he can't find a strike zone.
No doubt, especially in high school, in a situation where guys come in, and you see that guy warm up, and obviously warm-ups aren't necessarily what's going to happen in the game, but in high school, if a reliever comes in high school, a lot of times if he's wild, he's going to be wild in the game. And you got to trust and not be afraid to trust that he's going to be wild, or you're going to trust that this guy's going to throw strikes, and you're going to take a chance to be a little bit more aggressive. So the end game is, you know, for me, is a lot with the coach, but I like it when it's with the player, like when the players are talking about it. It's really cool. Yeah, like, how did he pitch you? What did he do? So we could teach that at the lower levels, you know, before they get to high school, winning talk in the dugout. You know, what did he throw you? Was he throwing that to you? You know, you're trying to find somebody your size and your stature, what side of the plate you hit from, how we pitch them, how we pitch you. In-game adjustments, for me, are not necessarily learned by the coach, but teaching the players to talk with each other. At the lower levels, you may have to have a coach sit down and do that.
Mm-hmm.
At the major league level, you have to do that with younger players, you know. But, you know, it's something to where you can do that in the game. And then you gotta let them go at the lower levels. You have to let those players go, and then they'll come back. And then maybe it's after the game you get them, or something like that, or you know, the next day in practice you talk to them about what happened. But in the game, you at the lower levels you can help them, but you're trying to coerce your teammates to get involved in that for sure.
You know, that is. I mean, it's such an important point that you just hit, and I hope everybody was listening. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I'm a big believer, and you just brought it up. I'm a big believer that, you know, we need to start teaching all this stuff at the younger levels, the 8, 9, 10-year-olds. You know, just because they're 9 years old doesn't mean they can't talk about, you know, where the guy's pitching, in or out. You know, obviously they're not going to go into three different pitchers. They're not all kinds of situations. But we can begin to get them to think on their own, whether it's hitting, base running, or anything else they do.
Right, because like you said, you know, kids are growing up in a cage. They're doing tons of lessons. And what I've noticed too is that players are training to get signed or get seen So that's an individual thing. It's almost like when we would sign players from Latin America, it's showcase. So America is starting to become a showcase.
Absolutely.
A showcase country now. The more you see it, especially with social media, you're able to showcase yourself. So you get more consumed with yourself and not talking with each other in the dugout. And the first thing when something goes wrong, the first thing we go to is our swing and not the pitch we're at or what's going on in the game. Is my attention span there? Let's face it, it's baseball is a patient game in an inpatient society.
That's true.
You know, somebody has said that, and I was like, wow, that's it right there. It's a, how fast can I get it? You know, it just used to be nutrition. Like, I want a quick fix to lose 10 pounds. Now it's like, hey, I want a quick fix for 5 hits. So I'm going to go on Instagram and find a hitting coach or a hitting guru. There it is. There's a drill. I'm going to take it to the cage. It happens in the minor leagues all the time. We get players who do that all the time. Hey, Post, you ever check out so-and-so? And then I'll go check it out. And I'm like, hey, you want to do that? We'll do whatever you want to do, but you better be all in on it. So it's a quick fix. Everything's a quick fix with baseball, and it's not. That's why you play 162 games. There's no quick fixes.
Yeah, and Ken Revisa was just on our show, as you know, for the Chicago Cubs. And he mentioned, you know, because of some of this, that's why we need to start making an adjustment at the younger levels.
Yeah.
Kids aren't competing. You know, they don't know how to compete. And I mean, and you talk about competition. There can't be any tougher competition than hitting a baseball.
No doubt. No doubt. So, you know, if you're playing in games, but you still got to learn to compete all day long with no supervision, I should say, or no organized practices and things like that. That's when you see the real competition of a kid. And the other thing, too, with baseball, I know when I was with the Cubs, they really looked for more than one sport athlete. It's not in your face. You don't have anybody pushing you. You don't have anybody hitting you. You know, soccer, lacrosse, basketball, football, whatever it is, it's all contact. So with baseball, there's no contact. So, you know, you may not be able to get fired up as much. You know, you have to learn to compete off the field. You got to teach these kids to compete in practices, compete before practice, you know, sprints, whatever it is. You're just teaching them to compete. So, but enjoy competition. I mean, that's what I learned. The players who are better than everybody else, it's not that their swing is better or they're stronger. It's they love to compete. That's it.
And a lot of – now you're seeing more and more major league teams and that are going to the World Series. You know, a lot of their hitters are competing. What I mean by that is you're seeing a lot of these teams a higher pitch count. You know, even with two strikes, they're putting the ball in play more. What's your philosophy on that? When I say put the ball in play, I'm assuming you want that ball still hit hard. You just don't want to tap it.
Yeah, if you put the ball in play with two strikes, your BABIP in the major leagues is .299.
Wow.
But, here, you know, and the thing that I want to get to parents and the coaches or even at any level is the information is not bad. It's just misinterpreted by the player. So how you look at Pete staying inside the ball, I can interpret it 100% different.
Absolutely.
Person. So the interpretation becomes a little bit crazy. So when somebody says, hey, two strikes, shorten up, put the ball in play, it doesn't mean take your butt out, step in the bucket, and make weak contact. It means, you know, win this pitch. Don't give in. Battle. Compete. Don't be afraid to get beat. Get a jam job over the infield. You know, break your bat. Hit a jam shot. You know, take your knock. That's what all that means. For hitters, when I was coordinating, you're trying to get players to understand that, and then some players will fight like, well, I don't want to lose a chance to hit a homer. You know, nobody's ever gotten a hit from striking out. I learned that from Brian Harper. He was our AAA coach. He was one of the best two strike hitters in the history of baseball.
Yeah,
they post. Nobody's ever gotten a hit from striking out. So I mean, you put the ball in play, you got a chance to hit a homer or a double. So it's hard to compete. So guys just give in. Because it's easy to give in.
Sure.
Because if somebody's able to compete with two strikes and battle their butt off and still do damage, why can't the next guy? You know, that's when it becomes the, not necessarily the mental game, but the emotional part of it, the grind of it, you know, the win every pitch of it.
Sure. And can that be, I mean, can you train for that? I mean, obviously because teams are doing it.
Yeah, I think you look for those qualities in a player, organizations, whether it's out of the draft, whether you know you're in high school or you're looking for a travel team, you're looking for guys who compete. Because you know, prospect is just a label that the press puts on people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So when we sit behind closed doors and we talk about players, we're not mentioning the word prospect. We're mentioning who's going to help the major league team win. Who's right. not going to be afraid? Who's going to compete? Who's going to be able to get a bunt down? Who's going to be able to not necessarily get hits, but be able to compete in the box and manage his at-bats is what we try to teach when I was in Chicago. We were trying to teach guys, you want to go up there and just help this team win. Just learn to manage your at-bats. And if everybody does that, you'll win a lot more games. So I think it can be taught to kids who want to learn it, just mm-hmm. like anything else. Like if you take me to a car shop and you start showing me how to fix cars, like I'm not in it. So I'm not going to learn it because I'm not interested in it just at this point in my life, you know. So you take me to like a convention when somebody's speaking about the brain or something like that. Like I'm all in. I'm trying to learn as much as I can how it works. So I'll learn that. So
sure.
Figuring out what a kid likes to learn.
Because situational hitting is so important. That's got to help you compete also.
No doubt. And that's just being a good teammate. You know, every you know, spring training, we do things with the machine where we have point games and we call out situations. And it's unbelievable. Like people would just go, oh, the major league guys, they go through the motions. No, these guys get after it. They run the bases right. They're you know, competing with each other. If somebody doesn't do it right, the veterans get on them. Hey, how are we going to win a World Series if we can't even do this in practice? So we got to be able to take it serious. And everything you do is winning every pitch is taking your practice. If you can't dominate your practice, how are you going to dominate in the game? You can't mm-hmm. dominate your teamwork. How are you going to dominate in the game? And that goes to situational hitting is just knowing that there's something bigger than you in the game. And that's when a team wins, everybody benefits. So situational hitting comes down to you being a great teammate.
And give us an idea about situational hitting, you know, certain situations that you might call out in your practice that they're working on.
Yeah, we do everything. You know, we may say, hey, is there on second, nobody out? But, hey, you know, we want you to kind of drive this guy in because maybe that guy's swinging the hot bat. So, you know, you do your basic move him over. You do your hit and runs. You do your infield in. You do your infield back. But then you'll start yelling out, hey, this pitcher likes to throw stuff in the dirt, anticipate dirt ball for the base runners. Because scoring runs isn't hitting. Scoring runs is hitting and base running combined. It's a combination. I think that's where people lose the fact of team hitting. Scoring runs is base running and hitting. You got to have runners on base, and you got to be able to run the bases and hit the ball, hit the inside corner. And so we do all things like that. We work on dirt ball reads. It's a visualization and anticipation. So as a hitter, you know, it's just get what you need to do done. Take the hit out of it. You're trying to teach the play because everybody wants to get a hit. They don't want to go 0-for-1 with an RBI. They want to sack fly, and then they end up popping up when they could just hit a ground ball. So we always tell the players, like, hey, if I go 0-for-1, I'm at least getting an RBI out of it. You know,
yeah.
if you as a player could take the hit out of it, and as coaches at the lower levels explaining them that it's really good when they do that, then they'll buy into it more.
Sure.
Bottom line, a player doesn't want to give up a hit. He wants to get a hit and a run.
Yeah.
So it's getting him to understand that to help the team win, it's about getting a run in first.
Well, I'm so thrilled that you added the aggressive base running, the base running part of hitting. And, man, I agree with you 100%. I just wanted to also, unfortunately, we're coming down to the end of the show here. A couple more questions, and then I'm going to let you kind of, you know, say anything you like to our audience all over the world, actually, on hitting or anything else that you just want to mention to them. But a couple more. I'm going to throw you one curveball and see how good a hitter you are, which I know you don't have to be a good hitter to be a good hitting coach. But give us a couple myths out there that are currently going on that you've heard, you know, within the baseball industry and on hitting that really doesn't happen. Any kind, the ones you heard the most, maybe.
Oh, boy, that is a curveball.
Yeah, it is a curve, isn't it? I could throw one at you.
Yeah, throw one at me and I'll go off you.
I'll throw you an old one. I mean, I remember, you know, and I actually have heard this recently, which I was kind of shocked because, you know, I've heard a lot of top hitting coaches talk about this. You know, with young kids, they talk about squishing the bug. You know, and in essence, that, you know, with the back foot, that essence, that kind of keeps them back if the foot is flat.
Right. That depends on the hitter. Like, you know, some coaches believe that to keep your foot there, maybe it'll help the hitter not jump out there. But, you know, when you watch it in slow motion, you watch pitches of guys are coming off the ground. You know, that's just force. It's the same attack as a pitcher would. You know, and a pitcher doesn't squish the bug when he turns because he has no lower half velocity.
Sure.
Some coaches will teach that or do that because they feel that in the game they'll turn it up, you'll swing faster. So in practice, they're trying to keep everything slower a little bit.
Sure.
But I can remember my first hitting coach was telling me to – I never even heard the term squish the bug until I got in a pro ball, believe that or not. Nobody even said anything about hitting. You just gotta hit the ball as hard as you can. And so you're doing that. But I thought sometimes, too, squishing the bug could also lead to open your front side.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it just depends on the hitter. Strength overrides the swing. So we look at hitters as super dudes with slow motion. We watch all these things. Some of these guys in the big leagues are humongous and they're strong. And some of them could be a little bit more uphill. Some of them don't have to be in their legs as much because they're so strong. They don't have to square it up as much. Some guys don't get up their backside as much because they're so strong.
And as Steve Springer says, you know, the young kids, you know, instead of spending, you know, maybe 150 swings a day, maybe spend 50 swinging and the rest getting a little bit stronger.
No doubt. I mean, there's different ways to get stronger. You know what I mean? Just having kids, it's not necessarily lifting weights. I mean, you push-ups at that age. You can do anything at that age to get stronger. Swinging a bat does make you a little bit stronger, too. Playing other sports, running, jumping, all that stuff that kids you try to get them to do makes them stronger. I'm trying to think of, like, when I was really strong. Like in high school, I never lifted any weights. But, like, you know, I could jump high. I could throw the ball far. I could lift things. I mean, it was just because, and I look back, it was because of my everyday activity, you know, of going outside every day and climbing on fences and running in alleys in New York and jumping over things like that. So,
yeah. You
know, there's a lot of myths out there. Just like, you know, everybody thought the world was flat, but it's really round.
Right.
We have to, as hitting coaches, continue to grow and learn. And I think sometimes we don't because we're afraid we might be wrong. What we're saying may not be true. But also, as a coach, you know, not necessarily you have to lie to the player, but sometimes you have to tell them something that's not true to get them to do what you want them to do.
So, yeah, that's very true.
You know, so it's you know, knowing who you're talking with about myths, and somebody can show you a swing on the video and the back foot's off the ground mechanically. And, yeah, his foot's off the ground. And, you know, Mark McGwire's never came off. You know, I mean, he's a monster. He's a lot stronger than everybody else.
Sure.
So,
and what about you hear this? You hear, you know, swing down. Now, how do you, you know,
I would say that's probably the hottest topic in the last couple of years because of how the swing actually works when you look at it's just a thought. If the thought of swinging down gets me underneath the ball to drive it, then I'm going to think about swinging down. But the barrel has never been above anybody's hands in the history of baseball. It's
impossible
because of the swing's too fast. The barrel
technology shows us that.
The technology shows us that. But every, you know, so if I have to swing down to get flat or a little bit underneath the ball, down is not down. It's just being direct and then getting on playing with the ball as soon as possible. So again, misinterpreted. We know somebody's not swinging down. But you don't necessarily tell them to swing up either because they're going to get so much length behind them, they're going to get blown up by velocity. So we would get guys coming in working on trying to swing up a little bit more, which is fine, but you still have to be direct, and the up path starts coming somewhere when the ball's coming in the zone through the ball and staying on the ball as long as you can without trying to create length behind you, especially at the big league level when the ball's sinking, running, cutting, slow, fast, curveball. You got to have a direct swing, get on plane, and stay through it, and then where it goes. But, you know, you're going to tell me, like, a guy like Adrian Beltre, who thinks about swinging down on the ball all the time, you're going to tell him that's wrong? He's going to have 58 hits away.
I'm not.
Yeah, he's 58 hits away. That thought of him swinging down makes him stay tight and connected and get underneath the ball. If a guy needs to think swing up to get flat on a ball, then he has to think about swinging up. It's just a thought. It's not the physical part of it. You know?
That's a great point. And I remember this. You know, you have an 8-year-old who's really, you know, swinging under. So now if you tell him to swing down, and now that gives a more direct approach.
Yeah.
And so that really, I mean, you hit that on a button. That's awesome. And then here's what I want to do here to end the show, Anthony. This has been great. If there's anything out there that you just want to mention to all our coaches, players, and parents around the world, this is your time, you know, mention anything you like, and then we'll finish up the show.
I just want to say it was great. I love being on the show and talking ball. Sometimes you're at home and you're spending so much time with your family and doing stuff, and you're not, even though we're interacting, through an interview, it's great to do it. First of all, I love following you. You're all over the world. That's awesome, man. Like, God, this guy's everywhere. How does he do it? So I'm anxious to learn all of that from you. I would like to say that you started IAPOC Baseball. So we just started getting on Instagram and Twitter and LinkedIn and all that stuff. So I'm still learning that, everybody. But please hit me up on any of those social media apps. And I'm still trying to figure out. But what I like to do is I run camps. I like to talk to, if you're in Little League, in high school, I love to talk to parents and coaches because that's where the groundwork is laid. That's where you guys are at teaching. You know, when I think about, nobody was really teaching me baseball at that age. They were just teaching me to have fun and enjoy the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you start meeting the coaches as you go, you know, as you get better, you start meeting more technical coaches or coaches who have coaching experience. But, you know, it was all the parents who did it. And if it was fun, then they made me want to, that made me want to do it more and enjoy it more and compete more. So to the parents at the Little League levels, make sure you're getting out there and you're enjoying it. You're having kids compete and you're not yelling, relax, from third base, from the third base coach's box. You know, you're constantly
that's right.
So that's about it. If anybody has any questions or anything or want to hit me up on Twitter or Instagram, that'd be great. And this year I'll be putting out some camps going into the off season. If I could be anywhere throughout the summer, you know, I'll try to do what I can when I'm not coaching, and then hopefully I could put on an IAPOC baseball convention here in New York this time next year.
That's great. And listen, everybody, Anthony's going to be on the speaking circuit. He's already started, obviously, in the off season, so you're going to be able to catch him. We'll have some of that on the website. I'll be seeing Anthony in a couple of weeks at the World Baseball Convention, used to be called the Mohegan Sun. Unbelievable lineup of speakers from major league level, college. You know, I just hope I get a couple of people that will come listen to me, because the names that are there are incredible. But I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing you, Anthony, and I thank you so much for being on the show.
Awesome, Pete. Thank you, man.
All right. To all our great listeners around the world and in the U.S., listen, we thank you so much for listening to the show. Without you, we wouldn't have a show. So keep listening. Spread the word out on our social media. Remember, the more people we get, the more guests we can have. The show will just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We're at Twitter at Baseball Out, Facebook, facebook.com/baseballoutsidethebox, and our email info@baseballoutsidethebox. We'll take all your questions. We got lots of tips on all our social media, so follow us. And remember, coaches, parents, and players, education is the key to the foundation of our sport. So keep getting educated every day. One way to do that, and it's just one, is just listening to podcasts or next episode. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.